Hello, I'm Sheldon Shalley, psychotherapist, shamanic practitioner, and the author of the book, The Other Man in Me.
And I'm Bertha Eddington, podcast producer, and we both welcome you to this groundbreaking podcast, Spirituality and Sexuality, The Hidden Connection. Sheldon, where is our exploration on this fascinating topic taking us today?
Well, Bertha, today we're going to explore the creation and power of myths. Even more specifically, how myths help us transcend the limitations of our human thought and even our consciousness.
So basically, we're talking about spirituality and its relationship to sexuality as found in myths?
Well, in a way, Bertha, it might strike you or even our listeners, kind of odd for us adults to be talking about myths. And that's an understandable point of view because, unfortunately, in our culture, the word myth is often synonymous with falsehood, as in the sentence, oh, that's just a myth. Mm-hmm. But I'm using the word myth in quite a different way, and I think it's perhaps the single most important concept of depth psychology or of symbolic thinking. Here's why myths are important to us. Myths are the stories that we carry around inside us. And these stories are charged with images. Images that have power to touch us, to move us, to drive us, or even to block us. Let's think about the stories that we walk around with in our heads. Some of them are conscious, but many of them lie outside of conscious awareness. For example, we have the myth of a story of the American dream and the right to pursue happiness. These stories have moved people to create better lives. They've brought many people to the Americas, our ambitious, perhaps even desperate search for happiness has been a remarkable myth that runs throughout the very fabric of our society. And then, related to that topic, we have myths and stories about what a marriage is supposed to look like, what a family is supposed to look like. These are powerful images that affect us and drive us in certain ways. And if we don't become aware of these myths or these stories, we live them out as fate, and they might not really be our individual myth or story.
Yes, actually, I think many of us have come to realize that, consciously or not, we have created stories about ourselves that define who we are and how we see others and who we perceive them as. So are you saying that our stories we have about ourselves or others, or myths, if you will, are false?
Oh, no, by no means. By myth, I do not mean falsehood. Now, a myth may or may not be based on historical facts, but its essence is more true and often more powerful than any one interpretation of history or fate. Author Michael Christensen, in his book C.S. Lewis on Scripture, and C.S. Lewis was an intellectual and a brilliant author, but also an apologist for Christianity and the Christian faith. Anyway, Christensen says in his book on C.S. Lewis on Scripture that myth is an archetypal tale. Now, by that, he means it's a universal and typical story that has existed in all places and in all times. Hmm. And this story portrays eternal or spiritual realities. At the highest form of symbolism, myth reaches after some transcendent or spiritual reality that reason thought really can't attain. It isn't that myth is irrational. Rather, it's non-rational. So reality is infinitely greater than our human rational conception. And continuing, Christensen says that when divine or a transpersonal truth falls on human imagination, myth is born. And far from that being less true or factual, myth actually puts us in touch with a reality that is more intimate, than by knowing what is merely true by facts or factual. Mm-hmm. Therefore, to regard something as myth is to acknowledge a higher truth, a deeper reality than could be otherwise expressed. In my own psychoanalytic work, I became convinced that for modern man, a myth is born when the outer images and events are recognized as carriers and therefore symbols of patterns of energy within us, or perhaps in the collective psyche. In my work with clients, often what brings them into therapy is that their main myth, their main story by which they live their lives, falls apart. It no longer works for them. In other words, the images have lost their power. You know, as long as our internal images are mirrored by the external images, everything goes pretty well. But when the external world no longer mirrors our internal images, or our internal images shift and no longer mirror the external world, usually a crisis occurs. And the solution then is often to find a new myth, a new individual story. And sometimes that's a collective journey also.
Yeah, and I think we've all experienced, you know, shifts in our lives that have blown up the stories we've created for ourselves. So would you say myths come to represent what we are experiencing that is beyond our conscious minds? And can we rely on myths then to be the truth?
Well, not necessarily. Any organizing myth functions in ways that can be creative or destructive, can be healthy, helpful, or pathological. Providing a summary of the stories that explain why things are helps to organize the different experiences of a community into a single story and helps us create consensus or community, and often provides a path forward then. This is true for the individual as well as the collective. So myths come from the same place that dreams come from, the same place that art comes from. They bubble up from the depths of the soul, from the unconscious. They can't be forced, nor can they be construed. They can only be organized into a meaningful story. So in my own life, the myth, the archetypal forces that initiated, organized, and held me in the story of the parsonage for so many years, began to fall apart. It sought what I would call death and renewal, transformation and evolution. A new myth, or perhaps the remnants of an ancient myth, slowly began to emerge from the depths of my own soul. Now, my hunch is it's not just my myth, but perhaps a piece of a greater myth that's emerging in the collective or worldwide.
Yeah, I definitely can see what you're saying, and I personally think it's true. I think it's a fascinating thought that as the world is changing, a new myth is arising to explain what we perceive as our current reality or the new reality. Can you give us an example of that?
Yes. As my personal myth or story, which was given to me by my family of origin, began to fall apart, I began to become aware of other archetypes, other images that were working in the depths of my own psyche. One of those was the appearance of the archetype of the green man. Now, we don't have time in this podcast to go into all the meanings of the green man archetype. But briefly, the archetype of the green man represents a masculine light or spirit that's in nature, kind of a masculine energy that is one with the earth, one with the Great Mother, her companion, her co-creator. It's the masculine that is in unity with the earth, not ruling over the earth or over the feminine, but ruling with her, kind of a co-equal in the dance of life. You know, the green man, if you look back through antiquity, he appeared on churches, on government buildings, as a figure of a man with leaves growing out of his ears and nose and face, connecting us to the earth. It was, in fact, this masculine energy that I sought in my same-sex encounters, one that was more earthy, connected to the body, to the senses, to the sensual, to the raw aspects of the masculine nature. So on my journey to get to know the Green Man and his journey that was living in me, that experience connected me to the awareness now that I have to hold the mind and the body together. It's not one or the other. It's not either or. I have to hold spirit and matter as one, with a sense of mutual respect and honor sufficient to allow a new consciousness to emerge, one that I came to realize is the inner connection of all things. This inner connection brings spirit into matter and matter into spirit with alignment and harmony. In the psychoanalytic framework of Carl Jung, we speak of holding the opposites or opposing beliefs in tension until a third emerges. The third represents the solution, the union of the two, and this creates a new consciousness or a new path forward. For me, this third thing was a manifestation of the union of what I would call the shaman or the ancient indigenous ways that's connected to the earth with the psychotherapist and the scientist or the modern way was the spirit or the archetype of an ancient masculine energy in the Green Man. We can see this happening in our culture today. The opposites are so opposing at times. And how do we hold the tension of opposing viewpoints until a third begins to emerge that provide a new myth or a new story to move us forward?
Yeah, that's just such a fascinating look at the overall what's happening. And it's just so encompassing, I think, what you're offering and that explanation. It's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. What did it all mean to come for you? And so, in other words, how did it affect your life personally?
Well, for me, I discovered a new myth was emerging, a new story. My story, a story that said everything is energy or spirit and everything is matter. It's only the mind and the illusion of time that separates them. So I began to see how my internal world was being mirrored in the outer world. So synchronicities began to show up to confirm this union of mind and body, spirit and matter, inner and outer. For example, I'm an artist, so I paint. And one day I painted a horse coming out of the sea. And my eye happened to catch the word Mercurius from Mercury in one of Jung's books that was laying on the floor. And I just had a feeling there had some connection between that word and my painting. So I pick up the book and begin reading. And after several pages, I come across a reference in the book that says, quote, "The steed that is in the water is risen up as a union of spirit and matter." For me, this confirmed this new emerging awareness of that painting connecting me to this awareness of this union of spirit and matter. In another example, I painted this background in a painting. I was staring into it, and I saw a man holding a bowl with a feather in it, as if he was bringing me a gift of a feather. Later, that week in meditation, a hand extends an owl feather to me. Months later, I walk out of a building at a training I'm doing on shamanic healing, and I'm met by a man coming up the steps. He simply extends his hand to me with an owl feather in it and says, "This belongs to you."
Wow, and that happened in real life?
That happened in real life.
Wow.
So that's the meaning of these internal images then begin to manifest externally. There's a synchronicity. Another example, I painted a painting of hands over a male figure with an eagle looking on. Weeks later, I go for my very first shamanic healing session in Sedona, Arizona. As I drive up to the driveway into the house or home of this shaman, I'm actually greeted by an eagle at the gate. And in the healing session, He uses his hands over me, just like I had painted in the picture. Mm. Now, is to place meaning on these experiences and events, are they confirmation for my journey, or are they superstition and magical thinking? Mm. Or are they some transpersonal, transrational spiritual reality? Are they evidence of the return of the green man that says, hey, we're all connected. There's a divine light and intelligence in matter and nature, and it's renewing our lost unity with the world of nature? Well, as psychoanalysts or shaman, as gay, straight, bisexual, or any other label we may wish to attach to ourselves, we must value what our journeys through our various experiences show us and say to us. Then we must accept the challenge of holding the space where opposing and powerful and equally sovereign forces collide on their way to the transformation and healing of the soul, whether that be my soul, your soul, or the soul of the world.
Well, that's it. It certainly is a broad and all-encompassing explanation of our very topic, which is sexuality and spirituality and the hidden connection. It's remarkable, and I personally agree with you. I hope other people enjoy this as much as I am, and I want to thank you, Sheldon, for so generously sharing both your personal and professional experiences and insights. It strikes me that although we are talking about specifically about the spirituality of sexuality, as we mentioned earlier, we are also talking about a general new awakening happening around the world. It's easy to see, I think, why this would be confusing and even frightening for people. But I think your explanation may help go a long way towards easing some of those fears, I hope. What direction will we be headed in our next talk, Sheldon?
Well, Bertha, we've been talking about seeing the hidden aspects in a behavior, seeing the spiritual in matter, seeing what we might call the imaginal sight or the invisible realm in our behaviors, in our dreams, in our fantasies, even in our attractions. So next time, I think we'll explore the heart as the source of symbolic or imaginal expression. We'll look at the matter of the heart and the heart of matter.
I love that. I look very much forward to that. And I want to thank you, all of our listeners, for listening to this episode of Spirituality and Sexuality, The Hidden Connection. If you found it valuable, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and share it with friends. We appreciate you joining us on this journey of exploration as we search to provide validation and deeper understanding of modern sexual and spiritual expression.
Yes, thanks to all the listeners. Please join us next time.